a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, my name is Neil Anderson. Welcome to Return to Real. One of my very favorite guests is on today. I love to pick his mind. It has been a dream of mine to find the people I admire and pick their minds. And Dan John just happens to be one of these guys. You want to look him up, danjohnuniversity.com, at Coach Dan John on Instagram. And then this one was the hardest one, Dan. You know how hard you are to find on Facebook?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
I have to work at it. I went looking for you and I'm like, Coach Dan John, Dan John University, Dan John Strength Coach. I was doing it all. It turns out it's Coach Dan John 1.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that's how I have to find you.
I didn't know.
Worth it to me. It's worth it to me. I'll go looking for you. Heck yeah.
I had no idea. Yeah.
How are you doing? Thanks for joining us.
You bet. Doing great.
You look good. I've been following you a lot lately. You've been doing a lot of interesting things.
Yeah.
I want to start here, though, because I think this is the timely stuff.
Sure.
What's the future of health and fitness in America? How are we doing? What are your thoughts right now? We're 6 weeks into quarantine. We might be opening in as few as 8 days. What are your thoughts? How are things going?
Well, I'm not sure that's a good idea. I don't think the virus is going to follow the timetable, but well, the future of health and fitness, I think the health of Americans is going to continue to go in a bad direction. I think when we get done with this whole virus discussion, you know, there's been some interesting, Maffetone talks about in a recent article. In fact, they just published something on this, is that the overfat epidemic, the obesity era, whatever, people who get the flu shot, you know, the flu shot?
Sure.
The more fat you have, the least helpful the flu shot is. And I'm worried that when you have something like the COVID-19 thing going on, since it isn't the virus, you know, the virus family of things, is the obesity era and these viruses showing up, are we going to start seeing something along these lines more often? In the era of fit as in fit to do a task, I think one of the great blessings of this, what's going on right now, is that many people have discovered there's no reason at all they go to work. If you can do all your work at home, one of my friends, Lacey, read a thing that productivity has skyrocketed during this time because the number of distractions you have at work, you know, in fact, I don't want to, I've talked about this a number of people, is that you get down, you sit at your desk, you go get coffee, Bob comes over, talks to you about the game, you talk about your kids, you get your March Madness thing out, you talk about your fantasy league, your rotisserie league, you go online, you look at, you know, the Dilbert comic. Right around 11 o'clock, you get to work. At about 11:45, you start taking texts about lunch. And at home, you don't have that. You just get the job done. So I think in the era of fitness, I think actually we might be health I'm concerned with. And I think the obesity problem is so much more multifaceted than what we like to think. The amount of microplastics that's in human poop right now is extremely high. So we are consuming a lot of plastic. And that's just that is an actual fact. The numbers are going up. Does that plastic in your system impact something. There's chemicals like BHT and some of the others. Did those impact? The fact that we subsidize, the United States heavily subsidizes wheat, corn, and soy, probably my top three of worthless foods. We just support those particular grains so much. Does it just, they're so readily available. They're, you know, I'm just wondering if those reasons, yes, we walk and do things less than we used to. That's true. But when I was young, you look at pictures of classrooms when in the 60s when I went to school, there's not large children. There's not large faculty members.
In the 70s, you'd find we had that one kid in class that was kind of large genetically.
Yeah. My high school football team, we were massively bigger than our opponents. And the big guys on our team weighed 230.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't. I'll bet we had one 200-pounder on my team. I grew up in rural Box Elder County, but I'll bet we had one 200-pounder.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't break 200 until I was in college. And yet I would work with high school athletes who all weighed 230, and they didn't move as well as I did. So, the future of health I worry about. The future of fitness, I'm thinking that with the air quality, especially when we're talking here in Utah, the air quality in Salt Lake Valley today, the last month has been the best I've ever seen it. Everyone has noticed the trees. The trees look the best they've looked in a long time. Now, it's spring, I get that. The birds, maybe for fitness in general, people staying at home, people are sleeping in more, they're eating home-cooked meals, they're not going to fast food as much. A lot of my friends are joking about, we're getting notes on our garbage cans from the garbage man with the phone number to AA, which I think is kind of funny because, you know, a lot of people are drinking a little heavier. They're locked up. And I tell you one thing, as a former teacher, if you want to start drinking more, hang around your kids. It'd be interesting. I'd love to go back to teaching just for a year because for the last, I don't know, about 8, 9, 10 years of my career, every parent was convinced that their child never did anything wrong, was the greatest athlete ever to walk on the planet and the finest scholar, kind of a Einstein, Jesus of Nazareth, Tarzan all wrapped into one. And a lot of these parents are discovering being around their kid 24 hours a day, they might not be the Saint Sebastian they thought they were.
It is a little self-correcting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Until that very second, I hadn't realized what it was about the trees this year.
You've seen it, but you didn't.
I have. It didn't sink in. I remember thinking, you know, it's a beautiful time of year, and I don't remember being that kind of, I guess, romantic about driving down the street.
I went to one of our grocery stores the other day, and the young lady and I were talking. She's probably in her 60s, just a child. And she goes, I think this is going to be the greatest gardening in the history of Utah. And I said, well, that's interesting. I go, why? He goes, everybody's coming in and talking about flowers and should I plant zucchini or should I plant tomatoes? And I think that's a lot of that is from what's going on. So, yes, what we're going through is horrible, and my heart goes out to everybody who's been hurt in any way. God bless the people who can't bury their dead. As awful as it is to not being able to properly care for the deceased, just hits me at a funny level. At the same time, I do see some good coming out of it. So there you go, Neil.
I appreciate that. I hadn't really even put my finger on the creativity yet. So what you were saying is we're more productive. I would take that up one little tiny notch and say, I don't remember a period of creativity that I've had. I've gotten more stuff done for sure, but I've also done some creative things. I started the Zoom workouts online at 8 a.m. and I've been thinking about doing that for years. And I've never done it. And all of a sudden you're in this place where like, yeah. And then you're thinking I can do this and I can do this. And all of my friends, my kids are making art and Lindsay and I are learning to play guitar. And
there you go. And again, so for me, I think a lot of us, and I'll be frank, you know, I think part of it is I think most, now we know that most people are having more vivid dreams. Stress causes more vivid dreams, but more people are sleeping. More people are, like this morning, Tiff woke up and I had slow cooked a delicious oatmeal for breakfast. A 12-hour oatmeal. I spent 12 hours making a 5-minute meal. And yet, right, so sleep, quality of food. I haven't seen so many people walking in my neighborhood ever. I look out the window and it's families. Kids are playing catch. Kids are playing ball. It reminds me, honestly, of what it looked like growing up.
I said that like a week ago. I'm like, this must be what it was like to drive through Bountiful in the 50s. Little kids out everywhere. Lots of noise in the neighborhood. Like you walk through a neighborhood generally and it is just silent. But this week it was like noise and laughing and it was awesome.
Well, it's interesting that gas is dropping in price where I have absolutely full gas tanks.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to cry anything for Exxon and Mobil. And
all no.
The they did very well on the backs of a lot of wars. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, the other thing about that is I hadn't put together the whole, that's why I like talking to you, man. But I hadn't put together the whole dreaming thing. The other night, we wake up and Lindsay turns to me and she's like, do you remember hitting me last night? I'm like, what? I really didn't remember. She goes, yeah, you screamed like a child and you hit like you were defending yourself from something. And I was like, well, that's weird. And then this morning I did it again. Smacked her in the backside because I felt like somebody was pushing me and I dreamt that I had to push them away. They're so vivid and I'm moving more. I can't believe, yeah, you're spot on.
Yeah. Well, and then one small thing, you know, when I go to the stores this time of year, I like to buy, they're called color baskets. And the stores put them out, they're $8, $9, $10 bowls of flowers. Well, I took the one home yesterday and I put it outside. I actually got four of them, but within an hour, they had all opened up and grew. And within a couple hours, it looked like I should have paid $100 a basket for them. And I was watching this happen. I thought to myself, they were inside in fluorescent lights, who not loved. I let them go on this delicious, beautiful Utah day, and they bloomed. And I thought to myself, you know, I love metaphors, but that's a pretty good metaphor. You know, you get outside, you breathe clean air, you go like that, and you look a little better.
Yeah, I'm almost hoping it doesn't go all the way back now.
Well, I did a lecture this week that'll be up on YouTube in a couple of days.
Where at? What's the name? Where it's going to be? Where is it going to be?
YouTube. I have a YouTube account.
Dan John?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe Coach Dan John. I don't know. I just have
look for a few things, folks. Put Coach Dan John. You'll find it.
And it's about three authors who really influenced me. But one of the things, it got me back to a couple of years ago, I read Mandelbrot's quasi-autobiography. He's the guy who came up with the concept of fractals. And he said that change basically comes in three ways: mild, wild, and no change. Well, it's interesting because, you know, my wife Tiffany was in Manhattan on 9/11. She saw, a friend of hers saw the first plane go in. He screamed out the window. They all ran to the windows. So she saw the second plane crash. So she was freaked out. So 9/11 is a big deal in my family. It took us a long time to get her home. But what are the impacts on the typical American about 9/11? Well, you stand in line a little bit longer to go to the airport. Did it affect Disneyland? No. Did it affect nutrition, exercise? No. As terrible as 9/11 was, the effects were mild. And yet, if you're a Syrian or Iraqi, it would be wild. And one of the things I'm thinking right now, that the impact of the COVID-19 in some cases might be wild. I think the era of working from home is about to begin. And here's the sad thing, Neil. It should have been this way for, we should have been working at home, I don't want to say 20 years. Yeah. sneaking up on 20 years now.
Yeah. I thought the same thing about education. I thought education will never be the same.
Yeah. Well, we're learning some good lessons, you know? Okay. For example, my wife doesn't waste any gas, tires, battery wear to go to work. She gets up. Most people now, if they're supposed to be at work at 7:30, they wake up at 7:09. Really, it's go to the bathroom, get a cup of coffee. If she needs water, she goes to my tap and uses my water. Lunch, I make lunch for her. Sometimes she makes lunch for her. Dinner is when she can have dinner if she's supposed to get off at 5 or whatever it is. And if she wants dinner at 5:01, we can arrange that. If the kids want to come over, my daughters, and they want to eat, they can come over at 4. We make dinner as a family. We're out on the deck surfing at 6. We're playing catch with the football, whatever. It is insane, in a way, to think of going back to Tiff rolling out of bed at 6, putting on that dry, clean dress, getting in the commute, me driving her down to tracks. She takes tracks in, buys a cup of coffee on the way in, sits down, talks about March Madness for an hour. Yeah, you know, yes. Are there issues? Sure. But there's also some quality of life that's better. We've noticed we go to bed. I've always been good about going to bed early because that's just because I like to get up early. But we've noticed that going to bed early is just nothing now. The sun goes down and I wouldn't say we're on camping time, you know, camp time or cabin time, but we're getting close to it. The sun comes up, I roll out of bed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful, isn't it? I'm glad you said this. Listen, my business has been closed for 6 weeks.
I know.
And I've got a thump in my chest that's different than any thump I've ever felt in my life. It's weird, right? But this talk has helped me. It's made me see some brighter things. It's helped me understand that there are some good things that are coming from this and things that now that you said them, I'm not sure I want to give them up. But an hour ago, I would have told you, I can't wait to get the doors open. I have to go back to business. My wife and I both work at the same place. Like we wanted it bad, but I don't know. You're swinging me.
Well, but here's the thing. There's going to be some things about your the lessons you've learned for your gym during this time that you may want to make part of the gym experience. You know, maybe from now on you have the work friendly Zoom workout for your members. That's the workout that's at 7 a.m. The work friendly gym workout.
Yeah.
For those who have to be at work at 8 or 9, maybe you'll have a Zoom option for the rest of your career.
We throw the recording up. You're right. It expanded my offering in a way that I've been meaning to in years and never got around to it.
Right. Well, you know, I'm pretty well situated for this kind of thing. The kind of work I do is I was able to rally up pretty quickly. But I also feel for a lot of my friends who aren't in my situation, but here's what's happening. A lot of them are saying, okay, I'm taking this time to build this. My daughter, for example, just got laid off by the university. All right. So she's a kettlebell instructor and she doesn't have that career. She lost her career this week, you know? So getting back in the kettlebells, she minored in Spanish. She's reworking on her Spanish degree. She's taking John Berardi's precision nutrition course because she feels that that's a gap in her education. And I sit back and go, you know, honey, you just got punched in the face, but knock down once, get up twice, you know?
Yeah. And is this Lindsay? Is that her name?
Lindsay, yeah. Yeah.
Lindsay, where can we find her? People need to know her excellent job. And the reason I know her name is I've been watching it lately.
Right. She's on Instagram as Lindsay Robinson. I'm sure if you find me, you'll find her. In fact, we did a video together.
That's where I saw her.
Yeah. My other daughter, Kelly, is a school teacher. And I got to tell you, kind of broke my heart when how she felt when she found out she would never teach those 30 third graders again.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of broke my heart. But again, this week, she's out in the backyard. She's planting flowers. She's redoing this area. And I'm like, that's what you do. You know, I think I told you this story before, and I'm sorry if I have, but it's a good one. On December 8th, 1941, my cousin Johnny, so my mom is the youngest of 13 and I'm the youngest of six. So my family memory stretches long. So my immediate memories are deeper than most. I lost three uncles in the Spanish flu of 1918.
Oh, wow.
My grandmother died in 1925. So, you know, my dad and uncles, I know stories of World War II that aren't most things about World War II that most people wouldn't know because I was told by the, so December 8th, 1941, my mom's family, the McCloskeys, got into the front room, and one boy, it went around the house like this: you're in the Army, you're in the Navy, you're in the Marines, you're in the Army, you're in the Navy, you're the Marines. And the wives and sisters all said, and don't worry, we'll make sure your kids are fine. That's what they did on December 8th. And that's what we should be doing now. We should be saying, you know, you go do what you have to do. I'll take care of you. Neil, I'm going to take care of you. Neil, you got to take care of me. That's what we got to be right now.
Yeah, let's start coming together as a community. I loved it during 9/11, how that happened. I'm seeing that to some degree right now, but it's different, isn't it, Dan? Like, there's also that thing that's going on when you get to the stores, where I went to Costco the other day and I didn't wear my face mask, and I got stank-eyed by a few folks. I got scuzzed pretty hard. And I thought, you know, this would be such a beautiful time, and the things could happen like you're talking about right now if we would all just look each other in the eyes and smile. If we could just add to the collective instead of looking at people. I got a damn Facebook message the other day from a lady that was like, let's do this. Here's a great idea. Why don't we keep track of everybody that's breaking social distancing rules? Let's shame them by pointing our cameras at them and uploading it to Facebook. And I thought, that is a monumentally bad idea.
Yeah, I do. I am concerned. And I think it's a top down issue of the blame game. I think one of the things, I don't think in the Middle Ages, when they did the blame game with the Black Death, it turned out not only historically wrong, but historically inappropriate, you know? So, you know, listen, in our lifetime, there's a good chance that a volcano is going to go off and, you know, we might have 3 years of darkness. It happened in the 1700s. It happened in the 1400s. It happened. There was a forest fire in Canada in the 1700s that darkened Washington, what we now call Washington, D.C., for months, months. And I don't remember George Washington writing a note to John Adams. It's you guys' fault. Would you open the blinds or whatever? Yeah. We got to get out of the blame game, man. Let's move on. I like the questions you asked. Right?
Okay, let's do this. I've got to take a little break, and then we'll come back and we'll run through some more questions. I've got some good ones. Thank you so much for this discussion. I love having you on the show. Folks, you are listening to Return to Real right here on KSL.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Hi, welcome back to Return to Real. I'm Neil Anderson. I'm here today with Dan John, and you need to look this guy up. DanJohnUniversity.com is where you'll find most of the stuff. This is a guy that couldn't walk through a fitness expo without getting mobbed, and if you're in my profession, you know him and you admire him, and I'm excited to be able to introduce him in this venue. We've been talking a lot about some fun stuff with what the state of the nation is right now, what's the state of the fitness nation. And I've enjoyed that conversation. Thanks, Dan. Dan John, that went together as Jan. It was weird.
Okay,
let's move on. What's the 10,000 swing challenge?
All right. Well, boy, you got, hope you got time. About 7 or 8 years ago, I had a real long phone conversation with a magazine called Testosterone Nation.
T Nation, you bet. I read it.
Used to be known as Muscle Media 2000, good magazine. And they were angry in a sense that people were writing kettlebell articles when they said, according to them, this is them, I am the expert in kettlebells. And so I said, jeepers, I guess that would not happen quickly. And the publisher asked me to do something about a 10,000 swing challenge. And I feel bad for my friend Mike Warren Brown, because it then became our job to figure out how you can do 10,000 kettlebell swings. Now, folks, if you don't know what a swing is, if you only did one kettlebell exercise, it would be the swing. Kettlebell swings by themselves just might be, and I hate the sentence I'm about to say, but it might be the best exercise you can do. I hate what I just said.
Of course.
But if you know, gun to my head, I had to pick one that does the most work, it would be the kettlebell swing. So the first day we go into the gym, we grab our 24 kilo bells, that's 53 pounds, and we swing 1,000 times. Now it takes us a
while. Whoa. In one day.
Yeah, so we figure, okay, 10 days, 1,000 swings, 10,000. We get to 800 the next day, and I turn to Mike and say, Mike, I can't move. My lower back was so full of blood, so pumped up, that I couldn't keep going. So,
what about your hands? How did you hold on to it, and weren't they calloused and
blue? Oh, yeah, that's if you want a good grip, good butt, good hamstrings, good lower back, here you go. So we finally settled on a system of basically 500 swings a day for 20 days. And then I did a total of 40,000 swings to write that first article, because I kept trying to figure out how to make it best. So that article sat for about 7 years. And then when the shutdown happened, by the way, it was the most discussed article in the history of Testosterone Nation.
I caught that years ago. I caught that. I mean, I stumbled onto a forum that was about 70,000 deep at one point.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was 80,000 unique posts about it on within like 3 or 4 days. Which does, I mean, like people posted on it, not replies, but well, we've done a lot of it since then, and I had some other ideas. And when this whole thing exploded again, probably the most, if you don't mind, one funny little thing. It's in the article, but it's absolutely true. I said something about my daughter's doing the 10,000 swing challenge, and someone posted, "Well, you're a little late to the party."
I read that and I thought that was so funny.
So what's funny about that is that, yeah.
I invented it.
Yeah. So this last week, Testosterone Nation came up with my revised article. I still stand by what I said in the first one, obviously. But the second one just gives you some more options to do the 10,000 swings. Now, ladies
and gentlemen. I saw that. Now, just to break that down, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Is the new article the difference, meaning you're doing some strength training in between it, your push and pull, squat and hinge?
It's just other options. The original had up to 50 reps in sets. Yeah. Well, I didn't realize, and I'm not trying to pat myself and Mike on the back too much, but Mike's a big engine. We're both very good kettlebell instructors. We know how to do the thing. We know if I'm doing 500 swings in a workout, 485 of them are really, really good. I'll have a few that are excellent. You follow my point?
Yeah, sure.
And I'll put the bell down. If I have a crappy rep, bell goes to the ground. Mm-hmm. But most people don't have that. You know what I'm saying? They don't have that quality for the 500. You can get away with a few bad reps, a handful, maybe low double digit, but if you do 500 bad reps, you're not going to survive.
No, there's like four things in my gym that'll screw you up. And, you got the kettlebell swings, one of those that'll hurt your back.
The first option is what my daughter Lindsay does. She just does one, and she does as many as she feels like. She picks up on that number, she goes to 14. She picks up on 15 and goes to 32. She picks up on 30. and then gets 500 swings. That's option one, which I think is probably the best for most people. Option two is what I love. My favorite is I have 26 bells, so we put 25 of them out there. We do 20, do each one for 10, each bell for 10 twice, and that you fly through. And then the third option is when you mix hypertrophy work, bodybuilding work with the swings.
Yeah, I love that. I love the thought of it. And are you on it right now? Are you doing it?
No, I have my own. I'm doing my own thing. No,
you've done your thing. I loved it. I stumbled onto it and I had to ask you about it. I loved your answers. Like when people were asking you questions, like what's the best way to do them? You're like, do them, just do them, start, get going.
All right,
I love that. I love that. So many people in our industry try to complicate and overcomplicate.
Neil, here's the thing. I've got a program called Mass Made Simple. It's 14 workouts, 6 weeks to build body mass. And I'll get emails. I still want to do triathlons. Can I do Mass Made Simple?
Yeah.
Well, did you do Mass Made Simple? No. You're just asking questions out of the – so with the most people, you'll answer almost every question yourself. I've had people tell me, when I got through on the 20th day, the 500th rep, all of a sudden I understood your frustration at questions.
Yeah.
Because every stupid question I had got answered by the repetition.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a life lesson there. You know, I'm a big believer. I don't know if you know this about me, Neil, but about once a year I go to a workshop and I take it. You know, original strength, fit ranks, kettlebell. I sit in the front rows of things. I never recommend yes or no on something unless I do it. And most people want to talk in the front about it. You know, I tell you, I don't know. You play football, right? American football?
Yeah.
Okay. Kickoff team, to try to explain to somebody the fear of a kickoff team, you know, you're starting the game, you're nervous, but it's also a kickoff, which can be the most, it can kill you. Literally, you can die on a kickoff team. And to explain what that rush feels like, you can't just raise your hand and say, so, no, you got to do it, man. You got to sprint down the field and get hit by really big people in the face, you know?
I love it. Yeah, I love your advice on that. Let's go. Let's keep moving. I want to shotgun some of this stuff because I love it.
I'll do my best.
Talk to me about the magic of loaded carries. You were the first guy and about the only person I've ever heard talking about loaded carries, because you say there are five main things: push, pull, squat, core, or let's not say core, hinge, and then loaded carry.
Right. Push, pull, hinge, squat, loaded carry. So loaded carries are when you put a heavy backpack on, drag a sled, push a car, or carry weights for time or distance, okay? So you can carry them like a bear would carry them. You can carry them like a farmer walks. All I know is this, is that every time I've had somebody do it, it's transformed their athletic career. Yes, people say, well, it's good for your grip. Yeah, it's good for your grip. Well, it's good for the – yeah, but what it is if you go back to the original weightlifter, the original progressive resistance guy, Milo or Milo, who picked up the bowl, he didn't do tricep extension with the bowl. He carried the bowl. There is something about carrying things, walking under load, that builds a weird kind of total body strength that I'm just not sure you can get it doing anything else. It's weird because you can always go a little farther. And improvement I wouldn't say it's exponential, but the improvement is shocking. I can give you body weight in both hands. You pick up a trap bar and you go for a walk with it with your body weight. The first time you might only get 25 yards. The second time you might get 100. Well, what happened in those days? Well, you could say, well, I accommodated, I adapted, and I agree with you. But what you'll also notice in a few days is you'd be playing basketball with your friend and he'll push you and you won't notice it and you'll slam on top of his head. That's the kind of thing that happens. So to me, the magic of loaded carries is the magic of loaded carries. It just happens. And I love
it. Amazing stuff. I've never heard of it before. And because of that, I started it myself.
Yeah.
I started doing some loaded carries. And I'm just playing with it. I don't really know what I'm doing with them. But I picked up some heavy stuff. I went the first time, I went about 90 pounds. I figured that's about enough. And I put it on a hex bar and I carried it across the room. And by across the room, I'll bet I took it 10 or 15 steps.
Okay, not far. Okay.
Okay. And I stopped. I turned around. I came back. I couldn't believe the impact it had on my body the next day. I really paid very close attention to my body. I walked it back and forth 5 times. I kind of think that there's a magic in the number 5. And I walked it back and forth 5 times. And I thought the next day I had been run over by a truck.
Yeah.
It was really impactful. Now let's not say I wasn't injured by any means, but I had cricks in my knees and I had
you were attacked.
And I had cricks in my back and my shoulders that I haven't experienced ever. And I work out daily.
Well, Claude and Jack Gregory had a 56 Chevy, and I figure that's why I was such a great athlete. Because that thing would break down all the time, and we'd have to push it. So, you know, push it. If folks find a 56 Chevy, but really, if you're a parent of a high school football player, take them to a parking lot. We've got millions of them in the state not being used right now. We got these massive buildings every quarter mile in our state called stake and ward houses, and they got these huge parking lots. Have the kid push the car around the parking lot a few times. It's the best workout you can do. You can easily social distance because you got one person driving and one person pushing. Heck, you ought to just sell memberships to your gym and make a lot. Here, give me $20 to push my car around. Gas would be great. There's your money maker. How'd you get so much money? I have people push me around.
Pushing my car. Who are you listening to in fitness right now? Who are the voices that you're paying attention to, past or present?
Yeah, more and more modern is Phil Maffetone, Maffetone. I first read his work in 1986, and I thought he was insightful, smart. He understood aerobics. He's never deviated from this beautiful path. I wouldn't say he recommends eating paleo, but his 2-week induction was in McDougall's book, Natural Born Heroes. If you ever use the 180 minus formula, that's Maffetone. Here's a weird thing. In the last few days, I deep dove into the work of Clarence Bass, who's also known as Ripped. You know, he's the Ripped guy. And I have 4 or 5 of his books.
That's old time. That's from way back.
But he's still with us. And I reread 3 of his middle books. The books when he was in his late 50s, Challenge Yourself, which I thought was a very interesting book. He's younger than I am. It's interesting. He talks about doing the quick lifts again, the snatch and the clean and stuff. It's interesting because his technique is just terrible in the pictures of him cleaning. It's just horrible. And I worried that, you know, if you're going to do quick lifts as an adult, your technique has to be gorgeous. It just has to be masterful. I did a really interesting thing on this lecture. I think I told you. I reread Irving Dardick's book, Quantum Fitness, Maffetone's Everybody is an Athlete, Everyone is an Athlete, and Art Devaney's book, The Devaney Diet, or here in the States, it was called The New Evolution Diet. I reread those, and then I did a lecture on comparing the 3 books. I've been reading a couple of German books lately. Somebody asked me about single leg Olympic lifting. So I went back to my, Werf und Stoß, shot put discus, hammer and javelin throw book in German. And I was looking up on the research they used on single leg stuff. And then I have a book called Kraft Training in German, where it's a lot of single leg and interesting things. And I've come to the conclusion that I don't see any value in it at all. The single leg Olympic lifts. It's like, man, the learning would just, the amount of time it would take you to master that, your nervous system would be a little angry with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't you think?
So maybe a little esoteric than most of your readership, but my family and I, because of my daughter Lindsay, we're all rereading Harry Potter, the first Harry Potter, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone or Sorcerer's Stone, depending on what version you have.
I've seen you do podcasts on some of these books where people that are Harry Potter enthusiasts and Lord of the Stone types of, I don't know. Yeah.
T.H. White's Sword of the Stone, yeah.
Yeah, Sword of the Stone, yeah.
Yeah.
Why are you into that stuff? What's the thing? Is it just literature? Is it mind-body kind of stuff?
My first published article was on the poem Beowulf. My first public talk was on King Arthur. I strive really hard to make sure I keep well grounded in the classics. I think you need to be a well-viewed person and a well-read person. Last night, my wife and I watched the 1965 How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, and Bob Fosse was the dance choreographer. Robert Morse, who later became famous on Mad Men. It's just a marvelous show. I think who you are is what you read, who you hang around with, and what you view. So I think you have to be a little bit, I wouldn't say you have to be a barbarian at the gate, or you have to be a goalkeeper and kick away everything, but you have to be a little discerning about what you let hit your vision and hit your ears. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've been reading a lot of Wayne Dyer recently, and that's one of the things he said.
Yeah. Wayne Dyer, for those of you who might not remember, a very positive, insightful man. Is he still with us?
No, sadly he passed several years ago.
Okay, yeah. He, for a long time, almost every foreword to a book was either Dr. George Sheehan, who wrote On Running and Being, or Wayne Dyer. Those guys must have written more forewords. One thing, if you don't mind me, I just wrote a foreword to a book. It's Dave Draper's. Dave Draper was Mr. Universe. He was the big muscle guy that was in the Monkees. Mm-hmm. He was in the Beverly Hillbillies. Well, he's struggling with a couple of things, and I was asked to write the foreword, and the book is called In the Rearview Mirror. And I've read that book probably through three times now. Of course, he was very close to Sharon Tate, who of course was killed by
murdered by Manson. Yeah,
and. And the nice thing was he doesn't go into that. So, but it's a lovely book. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go check some of those out. Before I let you go though, I have to find out what Tonic Thursdays are and why.
Well, Tonic Thursday. So Coach Mon at Utah State University had a thing called the 2-day lag rule or the 48-hour lag rule. Let's just go with 2 days. Okay.
Okay.
You can train hard the day before a track meet, and it won't impact your performance. But 2 days will.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. So at Utah State, Thursdays was basically my workout would be warm up. And so I would warm up for the – if I was throwing if I was doing all three, the shot put, discus, and hammer, then I would kind of come out, do a general warm up, do a few discus drills, maybe take one throw, go to the shot put, kind of re-warm up, take one or two standing throws, done. Go to the hammer ring, do a few drills, let one hammer throw go, and go home. So we're talking about half an hour, not nothing. So this tradition started with me, this idea that since I used to mostly compete on Saturdays throughout my adult career, Highland Games are on Saturdays, weightlifting meets are on Saturdays, track meets are on Saturdays, that Thursday should always be an easy day. And tonic comes from the same root as tune, like you tune a violin or tune a guitar. And so what Thursday we try to do is tune up. We do mobility drills. We do flexibility drills. We stretch our toes, our fingers, our wrists, our ankles. We do the child's pose, the toe cracker, you know, the toe breaker pose. We try to go through, we do a fair amount of rolling on the ground on these different, very basic, simple rolls. And the idea is when you're done is to stand up and go, yeah, you know, I feel better than when I got here. And that's as simple as it can be. Historically, it's the most popular workout. And then what we did for years was Friday was the heavy carries day, We've changed that now to it's a rucking day now. And the difference between rucking and loaded carries is going to be hard for most people to see. Yeah. But so the Tonic Thursday idea. So I think it's important, and I hope the listener would listen to this. I think it's a big mistake to always think of going to the gym as an opportunity to throw up and get sweaty and feel crappy.
That has gotten so popular over the last 10 years. That's all anybody can think of. If I try to do Tonic Thursdays, my people are a little more discerning too, but even they would be like, now we're going to work out.
Right. And so what you need to do, and I think it's very important, is to have, over time, you're only going to be able to have at least one hard session a week. And truth, once you get the better and better and better you get, the only hard sessions you can have are competition. That's one of the hardest lessons to learn as an athlete is if you're constantly bang, 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 banging at 90%, you'll never get your 100 because there's no ceiling to go to. You know, I use the image of a rubber band. You got to let it go sometimes. And the Tonic Thursday is a conscious reminder that I'm going to let it go. And I'm getting ready to let it go. And that's part of it. And I think it's a beautiful idea. Weirdest thing, though, Neil, is that it's also the day most people get the hungriest.
I was listening to that. What's your explanation for that?
I think that mobility, work, going through a full range of motion, flexibility work, that whole stretching yourself, I kind of just wonder if that makes your body kind of go, okay, this is different. There's something coming around the pike here. Let's throw some more food down the barrel so we're ready for whatever's about to hit us. And here's the funny thing. A heavy meal after a Tonic workout is probably the meal that you're going to be using. That's the kindling and the firewood that you'll be using on Saturday's competition.
Wow. That's interesting stuff, and I love it.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you know, if you ate a big brunch on Thursday and you by law had to fast until competition on Saturday, you'd be fine.
You'd be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never thought that before. That's the first time I've said that out loud.
Would you go as far as saying, you, Dan John, would you go as far as saying it might speed metabolism on Thursday to slow down a little bit?
Yes. Yes. Yes, because we know that's true.
Nice.
Because the biggest mistake I think you can make is when you talk about training, slide over to that Soviet top-down thing. I think the most important thing is that every listener has to understand that, gentle listener, you are the architect of your training. You are the architect of your body. You own it. And then once you get – okay, that'd be step one. Step two is to get rid of that idea that the bathtub model of nutrition is right. You have the faucet on and you have the drain and you want them to equal each other. That's just not elegant enough for survival. So what you have to start thinking is, and it sounds crazy, but it gets back to the mild, wild, and no. Sometimes the best thing you possibly do for yourself is to take a 1 hour nap. Sometimes the best thing you can do to lose body fat is sleep 12 hours a night. I did that as an experiment years ago. Well, maybe another time we can talk about it. I lost 13 pounds in a week just by sleeping more.
Well, yeah, of course you did.
Of course, because you never crave carbohydrates. You never want them. You don't need them.
And sometimes that craving is just the stress that your body can't offload.
Exactly. So sometimes the worst thing you can do for your body composition is going to the gym and turn on the burners, because what's going to happen is that's just more stress, which is more cortisol, which is more spiraling downward. I've heard people explain this, but that's the road to syndrome X. That's the road to the obesity, the diabetes, the high blood pressure, that whole multiple causation, what we call now syndrome X. Yeah.
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 I have been enlightened. Good. I have been uplifted, and I have been educated, and I'm grateful to you, Dan John. If you are looking for Dan John, danjohnuniversity.com, that's the best place to find you.
Yeah. And don't forget, during as long as the coronavirus is around, 3 months for $29 gets you full access to, I think we have 15 books up there for free now.
Wow.
Over 100 articles. But the best thing is that little workout generator that you can train at home, no equipment. No matter what you say, we can help you out, okay?
DanJohnUniversity.com. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom with us today, Dan. I love talking to you, buddy. Thank you so much.
Let's do it again soon, okay?
All right, folks, you've been listening to Return to Real right here on KSL.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.